You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Welcome on campus to the Purple Project Podcast. On the menu, this podcast is all about the latest developments in Kansas State athletics. From football to basketball and everything else in between the college town of the Little Apple, it's the Purple Project Podcast. And now your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State Nation, welcome back to another edition of the Purple Project Podcast, weekly edition, episode 104, coming at you, recording this podcast on this Friday night. It is the weekend, Father's Day weekend is here. All you K-State dads out there, early, happy Father's Day to all you guys out there. I know we're sitting there recording this podcast on Friday night, June 17th, 2022. Another edition, Hot Stove, coming at you on the Purple Project Podcast Weekly, part of the Purple Project Podcast. For those of you new to the show, welcome on board. And those who have been following for quite a while, we appreciate your support. And as usual, of course, the Purple Project Podcast, you can find it wherever you get your podcast. And this podcast is partnered up by the Rally in the Valley, a month and a half away, coming here in Manhattan, Kansas, August 6th. It'll take place in the parking lot, back parking lot, of the Midwest Dream Car Collection Museum out there. For those of you who will be coming out of town, who listen to this podcast, or the little townies here in Manhattan, or the close range, whether it's Jefferson City, Wamego, in other cities, Kansas City, you know where it is. Purple Project Podcast, weekly edition here. Before I bring on my co-host, Alex Aiden, of course, for this edition, of course, we've been knocking down weeklies each and every week, of course. If you have not listened to the latest episodes, including the one with Anthony Frias II, might want to go check it out yourselves. That was a good conversation with him. The enthusiasm that he brought to the table last week was something else, so definitely check that out as well. And of course, gotta mention the storms here last week, the whatever you want to call it, the mist, we dodged a bullet there with the high winds. Obviously, we need to be continuing to be thinking about those who were affected in Marysville and Blue Rapids, Kansas, getting themselves back together up there as well with all the high winds and / tornado damages as well. Saw some pretty cool under the dome stuff there with all the clouds and everything else. So that was something to see there as well. But thankfully we're here, and thank for you guys for coming on to the podcast as well. And before I bring on Alex on again, have to bring mention. I mentioned Rally in the Valley. Of course, we've been promoting that for several weeks now. We'll be doing a sit-down interview with the folks in charge next Friday at this time. Well, not at this time, but a little bit earlier than 10 o'clock at night. So that will be turned into a podcast, and that will be out along with the normal weekly edition of this podcast. So a lot going on for the Purple Project Podcast, along with the 3 days with the dailies, as we are officially in the quiet zone, or somewhat quiet zone, of the sports season after it concluded with the K-State track and field team national champion TJ Sankar, high jump national champion, bringing home to cap off the K-State athletic season for 2021 and 2022. Business has been taken care of. Time to be on the coast, usually for the podcast. Alex Aiden. Alex, what's going on out there in San Diego, California?
Not a lot going on out here, Eddie. Not a lot going on out here. And look, it is recruiting season, clearly, is what we're entering, because that really is going to be probably the thick of K-State talk here probably for the rest of the summer. I mean, that's probably going to be near the top, as you know, the K-State football team. Probably going to be a lot of action with their 2023 class, and then the basketball team rounding out their roster. As well, that's probably going to be the biggest thing up until football, up until when it's actually time to to put the pads on, right, and play ball. So that'll probably take up a big chunk of it. Also, Eddie, just want to say I do hope everybody out there in Manhattan is safe and sound, including you. With the storm that ripped through, it did seem like it could have been a lot worse there in Manhattan last weekend. I saw that it still cost about $10 million worth of damage out there in Manhattan or somewhere around there. So it definitely did do some damage. So I'm glad it was not a lot worse. Ironically enough, Eddie, the week before, a tornado tore through in the middle of the night. I would say maybe 5 minutes from where I grew up, like 5 minutes there in Kansas City in Johnson County. And man, they dodged a bullet too, Eddie, because it went right down a major roadway and did not veer like off into any subdivision. So there was really just tree damage there too. So, man, everywhere I used to live is like dodging tornadoes and stuff like that left and right. So it is indeed summer in the Midwest. I guess that's the best way to put it. But hopefully everybody is safe and sound out there in Manhattan, and I'm glad that at least the worst was dodged, and hopefully everybody can rebound from all the other damage. I'm ready to dive in, talk sports with you, talk K-State with you, kind of get to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to start off a little bit different than normal on this podcast. We love a kind of cliffhanger on last week's edition of the podcast, episode 103, where Alex brought up, or it really kind of started with Tim Fitzgerald with his daily deliveries about bringing in
you
wrestling.
You had not seen it. You had not seen it.
Bringing up wrestling, replacing that with was baseball in reverse with softball, bringing that in instead of baseball, and wrestling taking over instead of soccer. So, yeah. So let's just say that, wrestling, of course, when we're in school, equestrian was pretty big here in K-State. We talked about that a couple of times since we've done this podcast. And since then, equestrian out for soccer. So, equestrian was big at K-State. I had a couple of friends that were on an equestrian team. Really good friends of mine were on an equestrian team. So, at the point where I didn't know they were going to take it out until like the last minute. I'm like, why are they taking equestrian out then putting making a women's soccer team? Well, now we see after a few years of its growing pains, the women's soccer team is still taking baby steps, you will, here, and maybe they can take that next step forward and be even more competitive this year. Obviously, they bring back a couple of good players. Also lost a key piece in that building block era with Stephanie Enitz, or not Stephanie, Brooklyn Enitz. I get my names mixed up here, but yeah, Brooklyn Enitz, who scored her first goal that we talked about recently on this podcast. So, where are you going to from wrestling? And I had wrestling. I didn't do wrestling, but I had wrestling at my high school down in Florida, right? So, we had some talent. There was some talent down there in the state of Florida down there. Now, up here, I don't know where you're going to get it. That's a challenge as of itself here. So that's kind of a question mark here. I can't remember if the Manhattan High has wrestling or not. I assume they do. I never heard of it. I hear the football team's pretty good.
I don't speak in Missouri. I'm not sure as much in Kansas, but I do know it's pretty big in Missouri. As one state over.
Yeah, so that's the other question. Where are you going to get the wrestling talent? Like we just said, like Alex talked about recruiting. We're in the midst of recruiting season, so where are you going to get recruits from wrestling? And as for baseball and softball, well-documented baseball Kind of took a step back. We already referenced that already on this podcast recently. If you've been wanting to get more coverage of that, go back, check those episodes out on the Pro Project Podcast feed, wherever you listen to podcasts there. Softball, I think K-State would have an opportunity to be more competitive, if not more competitive, than the baseball team there. And that might be a little bit of a bold prediction there, but there's some talent. Yeah. And
I could see it. I mean, I can see it the way the landscape is kind of in the state of Kansas and the some of the softball talent around there.
Yep, and hence the NCAA Women's College World Series, the two finalists for the national championship, Oklahoma and Texas, right, battling out there when we saw Oklahoma with ridiculous record of 59-3.
Yeah.
To finish out in Texas, not too shabby either. Some 47-11, if I remember correctly, or with some two ties or something like that.
They did have a tie, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How do you get a tie in softball when you can go into extras? I have no idea. You're in the highest. You're at least the highest level college softball. You would at least play extra innings, not this little league or whatever you want to call it, and just settle for ties. You gotta have a winner.
And you probably know if we had a softball team, so we'd probably know the rules a little bit better.
Yeah.
Whatever they do.
Yeah, yeah. So I believe K-State, if they in the future, like maybe 5-10 years down the road, decide to maybe go for a softball team, and if the baseball team ain't competitive no more, then, hey, let's just change it up a little bit. Let's just, yeah, use Twain Family Stadium probably in the middle of that field, maybe make a fence, obviously, because unless you're on steroids or whatnot, you're not going to hit it that far. But, yeah, you can shrink the field a little bit there to the softball standards of the NCAA there, and you can go to work from there. I know there's some, obviously we brought up the Big 12 conference there of Texas and Oklahoma, and there's some other teams out there as well. So I think KC would be pretty competitive in softball. Wrestling, I'm not 100% sure. You're going to have to go outside the box there to bring in recruits, and again, recruits to Manhattan, Kansas. How are you going to do that with with the wrestling talent? I have no idea there. So I kind of find it fascinating there that what if you change things up for K-State there, and also the financial part as well there. Obviously, soccer with wrestling might be the same. Softball, they might gain. They might be even to baseball, maybe even a step further forward than baseball, probably, given the fact that I've already predicted that, you know, I think they'd be more competitive and maybe be right there in the mix than K-State men's baseball. And this is in the future, if this were to happen, not saying that it won't, but kind of thinking about it a little bit this week, it could be interesting around here in Manhattan, Kansas.
It could, Eddie, and you're correct. I think the important thing for everyone to understand is that this was a hypothetical thrown out by Tim Fitzgerald in one of his daily deliveries that he had. I think it was last week or was it the week before? I can't remember. It was one of the two on his Reaching the Summit series that he had on the daily deliveries. And he even said, like, look, you know, I'm not necessarily saying they should do this. I'm saying you could talk me into this and that this could make sense. And you know, Eddie, you mentioned equestrian and women's soccer. And that was one that at the time, I mean like immediately when I heard the reaction, I was like, really? Wow, they're getting rid of like equestrian for women's soccer? Like, man, equestrian's pretty big K-State. Like, I don't know why they're doing that. And then once you actually step back and kind of took a broader view, right, of things, it made more sense because Kansas City is a booming soccer city. You're going to have a lot of recruiting opportunities in Kansas City. And even outside of Kansas City, it is too. But, I mean, heck, Eddie, Kansas City is one of the biggest soccer cities now in the country, and it's 2 hours away from you. So it makes a lot of sense, right, to get a soccer team in there and see if you can capitalize on that momentum from the metropolitan area around you. So when you looked at that, and you looked, it made too much sense for them, right? It made too much sense to say, like, we need, like, to replace equestrian with soccer. So I think it was definitely, in my opinion, the right move to make once you kind of took the emotions out of it and took a look at it. And as you mentioned, Eddie, look how long it's taken them. Look how long it is taking the women's soccer team to get going. And that is with a really fertile recruiting bed right in their backyard.
Yeah,
there in Kansas City. It is not easy to start a program from scratch. It is hard to do. It takes a long time. And the women's soccer team is a prime example because K-State is set up to succeed pretty well in soccer due to the geographical situation there. but they're closer to Kansas City than anyone in the Big 12, but Kansas, right? Yeah. But they are still trying to get their footing. They're still trying to get up and going. They haven't really gotten a ton of momentum yet, just to be 100% honest.
Yeah.
So it's hard to do. It's hard to do. I think that's the important thing to understand here. I think the women's softball makes a lot of sense, especially if you're replacing, which in this case what Fitz recommended, well, not recommended, but suggested they could do, would be replace the tennis team. And I think it does make sense because he mentioned it's not a sport, tennis, where you have a lot of in-state players, right? You've got a lot, and it's primarily, players from other countries that are coming to K-State and playing tennis. And in softball, it would be different. In softball, you'd be recruiting a lot of local kids. Because, again, Kansas City, really fertile grounds for recruiting in softball. And a lot of those recruits go to schools like Texas and Oklahoma. And if K-State had a softball team, could they be able to get those recruits? Could they build that program? Potentially. They could be potentially built to succeed. Like you mentioned, it might even be easier for them to recruit than the men's baseball team eventually at some point. So I think that does make a lot of sense. I think it makes a lot of sense adding the potential of adding a softball team and replacing the tennis team with that. And look, I have nothing against tennis, Eddie. I played tennis in high school. I played tennis at K-State, not professionally, but I played tennis at K-State. Like, I'm a tennis guy. I play tennis. I like tennis. And I got two rackets, Eddie, and sitting in my closet right now. I got some balls. I go hit. But look, it does in my mind. You can make the argument. You can sell me on that argument of saying, "Hey, we should replace the tennis team with a softball team." You can sell me on that. You can. You can't sell me on the baseball wrestling, Eddie. You can't sell me on that one. I understand. Again, I understand what Fitz was saying. I understand what he was saying with that. And I also really appreciate Fitz kind of thinking outside the box. You know, thinking outside the box like that. A lot of people, you know, kind of are draw within the lines and don't kind of think about things like that. And sometimes you need to get a little creative with your thinking. So I really appreciate him doing that. But man, Eddie, baseball. K-State, they don't just have some, like, you know, piece of crap baseball program either. You know what I mean?
No.
It's a fine program. Is it a great program? No. Has it ever been a great program? No. Will it ever be a great program? Probably not. But you know what? A lot of it has to do with the things that Fitz mentioned. K-State, it's harder to recruit. They're too far north. They can't compete. For talent the way the Southern schools can. They can't practice as much as those schools that are south. They don't have that ability because of where they're located in the state of Kansas. It's almost, I think he said, it's almost like they're a state too far north. And I agree with him. I agree with him on that, all that. But K-State has proven that they could win. They have, and Fitz mentioned it, they've won Big 12 championships. They've won Super Regionals, or they've gone to Super Regionals. They've won Super Regionals. They've gone to College World Series, or they've at least gotten on the doorstep of College World Series. Like, they've reached those limits, Eddie. You know, they've hit that. They've hit that bar. And so they can do it. And they're not just finishing last place in the conference every year. I think that they are an exciting team to watch. I think that it would really be a big void without the baseball team. Because I really view the baseball team, and in my opinion, Eddie, is probably the, the third or fourth biggest sports draw for K-State. Probably, you know, first and second is obviously K-State football and K-State basketball, and they're either third or fourth. Them or women's basketball are probably third and fourth. So it's hard to sell me on taking a program that has that type of draw away, especially for men's wrestling, where, again, really good in the state of Missouri. There's a lot of good wrestling, prospects in the state of Missouri. I know Mizzou's got a phenomenal wrestling team, and I get the wrestling's really popular. It is a very popular thing. A lot of people are doing it. I think that there's some good wrestlers in Topeka too. I believe, but it doesn't make sense that he's getting rid of a baseball team to bring in a wrestling team. If you bring in the softball team and you're keeping, you're keeping some sort of a, baseball, softball going on, you could kind of make an argument, but not really. I mean, I just don't think I can get on board with getting rid of the baseball team. I just don't think I can. So, again, interesting scenario painted by Fitz, and something to mull over. And something that got me thinking a lot, Eddie. I was thinking a lot about it. I was like, okay, that's interesting. I mean, wrestling is really popular right now. And, softball is really popular right now. And, there's a lot of good recruits. But you got to think, Eddie, how difficult it is to build up a new program. And I think that K-State soccer team is a perfect example, because K-State is set up to succeed with their surroundings, and it is still taking them this long. So you don't want to just get a team and just get stumped every year. That's not going to be fun. It's not going to be fun if K-State, Eddie, gets a softball team and they go 3-59 instead of 59-3. Like, that's not gonna, not saying they would go 3-59, but you get my point.
Yeah.
That's not a lot of fun. That's not a lot of fun. So I think that you've got to think about that. And also, Eddie, when baseball's good, It really does get a lot of traction at K-State, because you're looking for that sport, right, to bridge you from basketball season to football season. Fans crave that. At K-State, we've talked about this, K-State's got a really great fan base that is really supportive of their teams. So if that baseball team is playing well, fans are going to show up, man. Fans are going to get involved. We see it. We saw it in 2012. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fans will do that. Mm-hmm. Fans will pack Toyton. Fans will go support that team. Fans will tune in and watch them. Fans will support them. Fans will absolutely support that team. And it's just with a sport that has that much fan support when they're good, I don't think it makes a lot of sense, really, in any way, shape, or form to get rid of them. And I don't know the financials, Eddie, but I've got to assume that baseball would make more money for the university, for the athletic program, I should say, than wrestling would.
Yeah, I see
really,
that.
I really
yeah.
have a hard time seeing wrestling making more money than baseball for it. Yeah. So I just don't see how that makes financial sense. I think softball, you could potentially make an argument it can maybe make more money than tennis, but I cannot see it with wrestling make more money than baseball. So, that's my thoughts, Eddie, but it is definitely an interesting thing to exercise to think about, especially in this day and age where you do want to always be evaluating all of your sports teams, all your sports programs, and looking at opportunities, right, to strengthen it. And I think that's kind of what Fitz was looking at. Are there opportunities for K-State to strengthen this and to reach that summit, which was the name of his series, because ultimately that's why they got rid of Equestrian and added K-State Soccer. They did it to strengthen that athletic department, right, to strengthen K-State athletics.
Yeah.
And put them in the best position possible. And you've got to continue to evaluate all of your sports programs and look at what's best for the university. So definitely an interesting exercise by him. But I vote to keep baseball, and it's, I would entertain adding softball, but I still need to mull it over a little more.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, so I agree with that as well. I would bring on softball and keep baseball. I wouldn't bring wrestling to K-State. Yeah. So it's all yep. That. Yeah, and yeah, we.
It doesn't make if you would say like you could sell me more if you're like maybe like K-State. And this is not to pick on K-State golf, but if you said, like, maybe K-State golf for wrestling, like, then maybe I'd be a little more open to hearing it. Because, you know, nothing against the golf team. The golf team had a great year. They actually had a great year. But you get my point. When you're thinking of it from a financial aspect, too, that just doesn't make sense, right? You make more money with baseball than you do golf. And so, again, it's kind of hard to connect those dots in my brain.
Yeah, yeah. So, and considering the fact that softball, when you look at it, you're going against the same teams pretty much here. Oklahoma State was second in the conference this past year. Texas, and funny enough, the women's Oklahoma and Texas teams made it in softball. The baseball, same two teams made it in the conference. Oklahoma, Texas. Texas lost. Earlier this evening to Notre Dame, who continues the Cinderella run for Notre Dame. But Iowa State, Baylor, Texas Tech, and KU. KU, by the way, they finished 3-15 in conference play, so you would be better than them, hopefully. They finished 20-36 overall. Right there, 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, you only have 7 teams in the Big 12 in softball there. I didn't even mention West Virginia. There's no West Virginia there. Here, no TCU. There's no K-State in there. So, yeah. So you'll be right up in the mix probably. So, we talked briefly about college teams being good at everything. Well, Oklahoma obviously good at everything. Texas, right there in the mix. Baylor, always seem to be in the mix for any of national championships. So if you want to strengthen your programs, you want to be up there competing in the top half of the Big 12 every year. And we say this with basketball. It's been particularly since the Pro Project podcast started, which we'll get to later on in the podcast tonight. But yeah, so. Very, very intriguing stuff there. So I definitely like it. I like it. You're thinking outside the box, trying to think of bringing extra financial backing to your university. And yes, we do have one of the best, probably, fan bases in the Big 12 as far as support goes. And yeah, I was in school when we were very talented in baseball, getting that close to getting to the College World Series in 2013. There, we're just a game away, pretty much there, from getting there.
A runaway. They were a runaway from you.
A run, yeah, yep. Brad Hill, former coach for K-State, was here for that. So, and it's taking them, baseball team, a little bit to get back on being consistent, being a little bit more consistent, playing better with the fundamentals, and we already hashed that. We already hashed that out on a recap show. Again, if you missed that out, K-State Nation, go check that out on the latest editions of the Purple Project Podcast feed, wherever you get your podcast there. This podcast, partnered by Raleigh in the Valley, coming here to Manhattan, Kansas, August 6th. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, the Purple Project Podcast. I mentioned nice little transition to volleyball on last week's pod. We talked about the conference schedule coming out for K-State Volleyball. Well, yesterday, the rest of it came out. The non-con, Alex, came out yesterday. And they're going to be starting off at home, kicking things off August 19th against Wayne State. That will be a practice game, or whatever you want to call it, exhibition game. I call it practice or exhibition. Same damn thing. But Wayne State will come to Manhattan on the 19th of August there. And then the K-State Invitational on the 26th with Sam Houston State and NC State, a little doubleheader for K-State there in Florida A&M. So you have those three teams there. And then our future team that's coming to the Big 12, UCF Challenge. K-State will go on the road for that, featuring them, Syracuse, North Florida, UCF, in that order, September 1st to this 3rd. And then you mentioned Missouri earlier with wrestling. Missouri coming here to K-State. So we're getting them for volleyball and football. Volleyball side, September the 7th there. And then the Rambler Challenge, another challenge for K-State. So they're going to be playing Rutgers. I don't know how good they are in volleyball. Imagine not. Loyola, Chicago. On the same day, doubleheader again on September the 9th in St. Thomas. Never heard of them. On the next day, September the 10th. And then you're going to Kansas City on the 14th to take on Kansas City there on that day. And then to cap off a non-con for K-State volleyball team and Susie Fritz, you have the Rice Invitational with, you're going to be playing against the host team, Rice, the first day. And then you follow that up with, the last non-con with Creighton on September the 17th there as well. And backing up a little bit to the exhibition game here in Manhattan, Wayne State. And obviously, Wayne State is from Nebraska, for those who don't know. That's going to be an exhibition game, which will be held Friday. That's a Friday, August 19th at 6 p.m. as well. So this is a total of 15 matches here. And according to what I read earlier, nine of these teams played in the NCAA volleyball tournament last year. That includes, Alex, six Big 12 foes. That includes, let's just reel them off here. Actually, three of them. Creighton, Rice, and UCF were in the NCAA tournament last year. And of course, you got Baylor, KU, and Texas. We know about those guys. And didn't know Creighton was pretty good at volleyball. Didn't know that to reading up on them a little bit earlier this week. So K-State again, Alex, looking at the non-con, pretty tough when you look at it. So if this was basketball standards here, you're trying to get into the NCAA tournament, this would play into your favor here. But this is volleyball here, and kind of the same concept, if you will, here. So you got some good, tough matchups in the non-con here with, obviously, UCF in there in the mix there. Rice and Creighton there to cap off the non-con. So a pretty interesting slate of games for the K-State volleyball team coming up in August, Alex.
Yeah, they have a handful of Power 5 matchups, Andy. They really do. This year on the schedule. First off, can I say I love it when K-State goes up against former Big 12 foes in whatever sport, it doesn't matter, but anytime K-State goes up against Mizzou, goes up against Nebraska, goes up against A&M or Colorado, any of those former Big 12 schools, like, I'm here for it, man. I'm here for the old Big 12 matchups in the non-con. Cannot get enough of them. So, Pumps to have Mizzou twice. We mentioned it. You got volleyball and football both on schedule this year. Sign me up for that. Sign me up. So if you said what game you're most looking forward to in the non-con, I'd probably be that Mizzou game. That Mizzou matchup. Mm-hmm. There on September 7th. In fact, Eddie, that Mizzou matchup is literally just days before that football matchup against Mizzou. They played Mizzou on September 9th or 10th. It was literally like 2 or 3 days after that. So I'm here for that. But looking at the schedule as a whole, Eddie, my first takeaway is a lot of Power 5 schools on that list. You know, you're going up against NC State. You're going up against Syracuse. UCF, who I'm going to go ahead and count them as a Power 5 school because they're a future Big 12 school. And you're going up against Mizzou, Rutgers, as well as Creighton, who, again, they're not technically a Power 5 school, but they made the tournament last year. And Rice, they're technically not a Power 5 school, but they're a school that has been competitive in a handful of sports, in different sports, and so they are definitely a competent squad there. So when you look at it, Eddie, I really think that there are some teams that could really help K-State, and not some teams, but these challenges, these invitationals, they really, I think, set up well for K-State to be able to prepare for Big 12 play. Because we mentioned it, Big 12's brutal, man. The Big 12's brutal. I feel like we say that in a lot of sports, but in volleyball, have a lot of good teams, and it starts there where you got Texas, you got Baylor, you got two of the best teams in the country right there, and then you've got obviously KU and some other squads there, and so it's tough. You know, those Texas schools are good. You know, so like I said, it is tough, and I think that this is going to be important for them. And also, they're quick turnarounds, you know, and that kind of is the way it is in the non-con. But you're getting turnarounds a lot quicker in the non-con than you're going to be seeing in conference play. You know, when you're going and you're playing these invitationals, you're playing three games in 2 days, you know, or you're playing three games in 3 days or two games in 2 days. You're getting these quick turnarounds, right, where when you're in conference play, you're going to play a match, and then you're going to be off for 3 or 4 days. And you're going to play a match, and you're going to be off for 3 or 4 days, right? So you're really going, you know, kind of that tournament style, that challenge style, that invitational style, and it's just, you know, match after match after match. So K-State, between the 26th of August and 17th of September, that 3 week span, they're gonna be playing a lot of volleyball, Eddie. They're gonna be playing a lot of volleyball over that span, and they'll get a week off. They'll get a full week off to prepare for Big 12 play. But boy, it's going to be a full sprint for them for 3 weeks there. So, you know, obviously they'll be able to, you know, face off against Wayne State in exhibition, get a week off before they enter that 3 week, that 3 week sprint there. But it's a lot of games, Eddie, in a short period of time against good Power Five schools. So that's really my takeaway, and we'll see kind of the way they handle that. But either way, you know, I think that's going to prepare them. Prepare them well for Big 12 play, and I'm sure that's exactly what Susie Fritz wants to do.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that as well. Yeah, a lot of volleyball, and especially those doubleheaders there with the, let's see, of course, August 26th, Sam Houston and NC State there, and then going down a little further, Rutgers and Loyola Chicago, September 9th there. So, yeah, a lot of volleyball be played. And kind of no breaks in between, really. Maybe a couple of days off here and there. I know between St. Thomas and Kansas City, those road games there, that's a four-day break there in between. Yeah, you're not getting much. And that's actually probably average, actually, when I'm looking at the schedule now.
Yeah.
That's about average.
It's a different pace, man.
Yeah,
that
so.
That non-con is a different pace than the conference schedule.
Mm-hmm, yep. So, K-State, obviously, Susie Fritz, the veteran head coach of the K-State volleyball team, that is going to be something there to keep an eyes on. So soccer, volleyball, and football, obviously, coming up in August as well. Cannot wait to see what unfolds with this K-State volleyball team this upcoming season. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, this is the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition, episode 104, coming to you tonight, June 17th, 2022, recording Friday night. It is the weekend, Father's Day weekend on Sunday. Transitioning to the hardwood now, staying indoors for basketball. And that's kind of where we are going to end K-State sports here tonight with a little bit of basketball talk, folks. Okay, so now, obviously, well, I'm in the wrong tab. Yeah, so I talked about in one of the dailies this week, K-State men's basketball got themselves another player, and this is a huge get here. We'll start there first. I already talked about him in one of the dailies already. It came out either yesterday. Yes, it came out yesterday. Desi Steels there. Transfer from Arkansas State. He was originally played at the one of the talented Arkansas teams. So again, you probably can put him in the category of the SEC, where Cam Carter, Jarrell Colbert came from as well. But yeah, Dizzy Stills was on one of those talented Arkansas teams there that made a deep run to the tournament a few years ago. And then apparently something happened to him where he got hurt, and then he was kind of left out of rotation, transferred to Arkansas State there, try to regain the magic, and now he has one more year of eligibility, that COVID year, and he decided to come here to K-State. So Jerome Tang, this is a big get for the Wildcats there. They add another player there as well. Veteran player, desperately needed the veteran player to surround. Obviously, you know about Marquise Noel and Ishmael Shue. We know about these guys. So you need another veteran player in. Maybe they still need that big time score, and I'm not sure if they're gonna get it or not. Time will tell. We talked off air before the recording of the podcast. Alex, you mentioned they're in the mix for a big, so they might not be done yet with that. But Alex, what are your thoughts on this big get here for K-State here? This veteran leader adding some veteran presence on this K-State team.
Yeah, well, you know, we were talking, was it last week or 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago? I don't know what week it was. It was one of the weeks that we were talking. We were talking about, well, you know, what could this starting lineup look like for the K-State team? We were talking about that once they brought in the Virginia Tech transfer. And honestly, that's when we were kind of like, man, you know, well, that wasn't really the moment we were like, oh my gosh, they need a scorer. But we were kind of going through some lineups and some potential options, and it was obvious that there was really one thing that they were missing, and that was an experienced guard, right? An experienced guard that could come in and provide some scoring opportunities, and I think that is something that Desi Sills can offer. This is someone who has 4 years of experience playing college ball. And playing at a high level, 3 years playing in the SEC, played for that Arkansas team, Andy, that you mentioned, that made the Elite Eight there a couple years ago. He averaged 9 points a game on that team, and I think he shot from the three point line. I think he shot close to 40-ish% that year, and then he ended up, as you mentioned, going to Arkansas State. It was actually an academic issue, which is why he didn't stay. Was what I heard at Arkansas, and so he ended up going to Arkansas State, and he averaged 12.6 points a game there at Arkansas State. So, you know, ups the scoring, but the 3-point percentage dropped to 25%. So his 3-point percentage went down. His overall point percentage went up. I think that he is now over his 4-year career a 33% 3-point shooter. On his career, so hopefully last year was just kind of a blip on the radar because he's been a pretty good 3-point shooter. The 3 years he was at Arkansas. But look, he's got 4 years experience. He's a guy who's played in big games. He's played in big moments. He knows how to score the basketball. He knows how to get to the rim, too, Eddie. I think that's another thing. I heard somebody comp him to Barry Brown. Not saying he is Barry Brown. It's not what they were saying. They were saying his game kind of translates to Barry Brown's game. It's the same type of style, right? He drives the basket. He drives the hoop, right? He's good at driving the hoop. He's good at getting high percentage shots up around the rim. And he's a scrappy defender. He's good on the defensive end. He's someone who can really provide some resistance there. And then he can hit the three if he needs to. Again, we'll see if he can kind of bounce back this year for it. But he has the ability to hit that shot. And he does have the ability to score bunches. You know, he's done that at times in his career. So is he a Nigel Pack sharp shooting 3-point shooter? No. Is he the Detroit Mercy grad transfer they're hoping to get? No, he's not. But is he about as good as you could get or hope for at this point in the game? Yeah, I do. I think that this is as good as you could do, as much as you can hope for at this point. And I think he's gonna be a really good player for him. I think he's gonna start. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We were kind of bouncing the idea around about Cam Carter, whether or not he may start. I think that this probably does relegate him to the bench, which is probably best best for him. I think Cam Carter's actually going to be really good, too.
I'm high on Cam Carter, Eddie.
I'm high on Andrew. I got no problem with it.
No problem.
They do. But I will agree that in an ideal scenario, they're both coming off the bench this year. I would agree. And maybe they start next year. But in an ideal scenario, as much as I like the upside with Cam Carter and Jarrell Colbert, them coming off the bench and them being able to learn to get coached up, because they're so young, they still got like 3 years of eligibility left. I think that is probably your ideal scenario, and you can get a guy like this, right? You can get a Sills in there who can be your grad transfer and go in there. He's a guy with a lot of experience. And then, as you mentioned, Eddie, they did land another transfer who we don't know who it is yet. All I know is it's a big, and apparently they are a really good rebounder, according to Derek Young. So, don't know who that is. He seems to be really high on him. They have that big is not announced yet, but it's supposed to be an experienced big who's a really good rebounder. So I'm guessing, could be wrong, Eddie, but I'm guessing that's probably going to be your starting center. Whoever that is, they're probably going to be your starting center. Jarrell Colbert will probably come off the bench behind them. You just got Sills, who's probably going to be your starting two. And then Cam Carter will probably come off the bench for either, you know, Marquise or Sills. And that probably locks down two of them. And I do think that you are also going to have the transfer, Tomlin, there starting as well. So I really think that you got three-fifths of your starting lineup locked down. And you may have some more guys. But once that is announced, Eddie, on the big, who I'm eager to see who it is. Once that is announced, you know, barring anything crazy happening here at the last second, I mean, what it was even tweeted, right? Jerome Tang even tweeted Emaw. He gave out the bat signal on Twitter. So unless something goes like crazy wrong, K-State should have address pretty much everything except really just kind of filling out a couple more scores. You know, maybe they could get one or two more scores. I think that would pull their scholarship number down to two or three. And then I think with the rest of those, you do try to find proven scores. I think that's what, again, you load up on those scores.
Yeah, you gotta get scores.
You just load up on more scores. You took a really good step in the right direction with Desi Sills. He's a guy who can score the basketball. He's got a lot of experience. You need to go get more Desi Sills. You need to go get more of them. You need to go get more guys who are averaging in double figures, right? Who can take pressure off of Marquise Noel. And, also, by the way, Ish Masood, he'll probably be in the starting lineup, too.
Yeah, he has to be.
You probably got four starting lineup positions locked down. Marquise Noel, Ish Masood, and then Desi Sills, and then the center that they bring in, and heck, maybe their entire lineup is set now, because I do think Tomlin will start. So maybe that's your lineup, and then you go and you get two more scorers. You can come off the bench, right, and provide Noel and Sills a bit of a break. So maybe that's what happens there too. But either way, you need to go get a couple scorers, get one or two more scorers, fill that roster out at that two position. And I think you're good, because K-State, they've loaded up on bigs, Eddie. They've loaded up on wings, and they've got the point guard. So, you just need to get a couple more scores. I think the roster's filling out relatively nicely, but
yeah.
I really think Jerome Tang and company are going for 2023, Eddie. I really do. I think that is what they're setting this thing up for. I've mentioned it before. They've got a lot of high high-end recruits that they're targeting for 2023. And a lot of these guys that they've gotten in the transfer portal have been guys that I feel like are some developmental guys that you may reap the benefits of it in 2023. So I think they'll be competitive this year. I do. I don't know, I don't think that they'll be a top half Big 12 team, but I think that they'll be, you know, competitive, potentially middle of the pack, Big 12, but I really think they're setting up for 2023. I really think that's where they're setting up to try to kind of leapfrog and take off. And you know, if you think about it, Eddie, with how much Jerome Tang had to turn over. It was going to be impossible probably for him to get the ideal roster that he wanted one offseason. So it was going to probably take a little bit of time. And, you know, looking at next year's team, while they're not going to, they're probably not going to be an offensive juggernaut, Eddie. That's probably not going to happen. They're probably going to be a team that has to win a lot of games in the 50s just to prepare people. But
Sound like Bruce Weber.
It's kind of going to be like that of this year, but here's the difference between this team and Bruce Weber's team.
Yeah.
This team's going to have a lot more height, a lot more length, and a lot more athleticism.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that gives them added abilities that Bruce Weber's teams didn't have. This team is going to be able to, in my opinion, suffocate teams in the defensive end with their length, with their size, with their physicality. And that's the biggest thing I see from them. They're just so big, Eddie. They're so big, they're so long, and they're really, I think, just going to be able to suffocate some smaller teams and just make life so hard for them on the offensive end. And K-State's only going to have to score in the 50s to be able to win ballgames. I mean, I really think that they're going to be able to muddy those waters up and play really good defense, and they're going to be able to win a handful of games in the 50s and low 60s. I mean, I think that that's going to be something that we're going to see a lot. And as I mentioned a couple weeks ago on the podcast, Eddie, all it takes is on one of these guys hitting two. You know, we didn't know, as I mentioned, we didn't know Marquise Noel was going to end up being what he turned into being. You know, we did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
So there may be another Marquise Noel. Cam Carter may end up becoming Marquise Noel. Maybe Jarrell Colbert ends up being coming that. You never know. That could happen. And these are guys with high upside, but I think that's kind of the way it looks right now. I think that's kind of the way it's setting up for the basketball team.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, so things are looking up for this K-State men's basketball roster. They're adding Stills on their latest get there. Obviously, for those who've been kind of been lost for the last couple weeks or have been keeping up with the basketball roster for Jerome Tang as he approaches his first full season here at K-State coming this fall. Obviously, Desi Stills here tonight. And there's also dailies on the rest of these players, including we talked about Taj Bane a little bit in a previous edition of the weekly podcast. David Gasson, who was out traveling apparently in the Netherlands. I think that was right on that. Naquan Tomlin. Yeah, I think Tomlin, for me, I think he starts.
Yeah, I agree. 100, yep.
Yeah. Dorian Finister, Cam Carter, Jarrell Colbert, yep. And now you add Desi Stills, and let's not forget about Noel and Mishud as well. Yeah, Mishud's a starter for sure. You have to be. You're at least one of the leaders on this team. You have to start.
Yeah, 100%.
And we all know about Marquise Noel, what he's done in the offseason and whatnot, taking this leadership to another level. So, yep, I mean, this is a big get there, and I'm 100%. You got to go after some scorers now. Load up with some scorers, and I'm on that train with you. 2023, his K-State team is setting up for they're trying to get things cleaned up from the previous regime, the coaching staff from Bruce Weber, trying to get that all cleaned up, the attitude adjustment right. And next year, the following year, hopefully we can see those fruits kind of start to labor a little bit with that. So, yeah, they got a lot of size and strength. I like how this roster's shaking out here with a lot of length and strength. I like it, yeah.
And I'll say this too, Eddie, and you're right. Man, you keep reading up all those things, and I'm just like, they're so big. Like, you're so big and so long. Man, like, I'm sorry. Bruce Harper teams have never had this type of length and height and athleticism. Like, I just don't recall. Maybe, like, his beginning team with Frank. But what I was going to get to, though, the point was, and I've mentioned this a little bit on some podcasts, but think about Jerome Colbert. Not Jerome Colbert. Think about Jerome Tang. Jerome Tang, he's been associate head coach at Baylor for a long time, very long time. He's 50-some years old right now. He's not some young, eager coach coming in saying, I want to build this thing like right now. I want to get this team. Let's just swing for the fences this year. You know what? You know that young, energetic, ambitious, coach. Look. He was a they were coming when he joined, went there with Scott Drew. They were on probation for having a basketball player commit a murder. Like, it was a awful situation out in Baylor, and it took them for a really, really long time to get that program where it was. And it's a miracle. I'm just going to be 100% honest. What they did at Baylor, in my opinion, is equivalent of what K-State did in football with Bill Snyder. I mean, it really is pretty, in my mind, relatively equivalent to that, except K-State football didn't win a national championship. granted, it's easier to, I do think it's easier to win a national championship basketball than football, but that's neither here nor there. It's amazing what they did over there. But this was, he didn't do it over a year. They did not do that over a year at Baylor. It was slow and steady won the race for them, and it turned that program into a power. Jerome Tang, he's been doing this a long time. He's been waiting for the right head coaching job for a long time. He's got it. He's not gonna deviate from what he knows and from what his plan is and what has been successful. You know, slow and steady wins the race. He's not just thinking about this year. He's not thinking, oh, I gotta go all eggs all in the basket for 2022. That is not the way. I don't think that's the way he's wired. I don't think that's the way his assistants are wired. I think that this is a long game for them. I think that this is a deal where they are looking multiple years out, and they're not here just to have one big season, right? One big season and make a tournament push. They're here to build a foundation, to build a program that's sustainable long term. I absolutely believe that's what they're about. And I think that is why they're not just loading up on a bunch of grad transfers, right? That could maybe make you a little bit better this year than they're looking right now. But then you're not going to be as good in 2023, and you're not building as strong of a foundation right below that basketball program if you have to rebuild the team again every single year. So I think that they're in the business of, you know what, we want to be competitive this year. Mm-hmm. They've also said we owe it to Marquise. You know, this will be his last year at K-State. They owe it to him. They owe it to Ish for everything that they've done to give them a good product on the court and to give the fans a good product. But it's bigger than this year to them, Eddie. It's bigger than this year. And if you look at the way Jerome Tang's entire coaching career has gone, it has always been bigger than one year. It has been about doing it the right way, building things the right way. Because if you do, you're going to be able to sustain it long term, and you're going to reap the benefits of it. So, reap the rewards of it. So, I mean, I think that it's important for people to keep that in mind. That, like, well, I mean, why? Like, well, what do you mean you don't want to win this year? You want to win in 2020? What? I think it's a good thing. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing because I think that you are building a program that can be actually sustainable in 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, rather than 1 year.
Yeah. Yeah, so you definitely want to set yourself up, kind of what Chris Klieman is trying to do with the football team, get himself squared away there with the team he's got this year, but not only that,
trying to get 3 years.
Yeah, it's taken him 3 years, and look what he has in front of him this year, right? So Jerome Tang's trying to do the same thing, trying to get rid of all the bad dudes from the Bruce Weber, which pretty much everybody's gone now except the two players that we well documented on this podcast. So, yeah, I mean, you have to not only just prepare for this year, do the best you can, but you kind of like speaking the, again, kind of relating to the Atlanta Falcons, you're not only trying to work around the cap situations, but next year we're going to be finally have some money to spend. So we're trying to go in that direction. So that's what Jerome Tang is trying to do in a different sense with this program, is trying to set themselves up right for the future and get themselves to a point where, hey, we can compete with the KUs, Texas Techs, and all that every single year. So, yeah. And speaking of which, Jerome Tang, Desi Stills, Cam Carter, and the rest of the guys, they're going to have another opponent to welcome into the Octagon of Doom. We talked last year on this podcast that we're tired of talking about Texas A&M, Ole Miss, when it comes to the SEC Big 12 Challenge, right? But we got something even better coming here to Manhattan this upcoming basketball season. It's actually going to be next year, technically, with January 28th. K-State will welcome Florida, the Florida Gators, to the Octodome of Doom January 28th, 2023, pretty much next season. That's going to be spring season now by the time it gets there, but it'll be the same season. This game will be highly televised. ESPN, well, it hasn't been released yet, but at least some form of ESPN will have it. I bet you it'll be ESPN will have this game. Obviously, the Gators, they welcome in a new coach themselves. This will come here with Todd Golden, new head coach of that program. Mike White went for Georgia. Golden now is reigning the head coach of the Florida Gators. The last time these two teams played, actually before I get to that, Jerome Tang in the press release, of course, saying, of course, quote, we are excited about the opportunity that awaits by hosting a program like Florida in the Octodome of Doom, end quote. And then Coach Jerome says, quote, I know our team will be fired up to play and our fans will be ready to welcome the Gators to the best home court in college basketball. That ain't my words. That's his words, but we all know.
Get that Octagon of Doom back. Let's go.
Yeah, we had to get it.
The fact I say that without laughing tells me that we need to change the culture of the Octagon of Doom.
Yep, we do. That's the next thing on Jerome Tang's list. Gotta get the fans back. That's a must. That's a must have. You gotta get it back. Especially like a team, welcoming a team like that, Florida Gators. So already you got Wichita State on this. I have not checked the full. I'm pretty sure it'll come out when it does. But you already get, we talked about Nebraska. Wichita State's on there. Nebraska, yeah. Butler. Now you add Florida to this mix. So this is again. They might not. You've been mentioning it time after time again on this podcast. You at least. I don't know when we get there. I don't know the record once we host a team like. When we play Florida, I don't know what our record will be. But I don't know if we're gonna be sniffing the tournament or on a bubble or whatnot by then, but. At least, you got to give yourself a chance to be competitive there as well. The series one is tied at 1-1. And the last time, Alex,
these two teams
play. I do as well because I was there in the booth.
I was there as well, baby. Yeah.
K-State knocked off Florida 67-61 in, which was the Sprint Center.
Yep.
It was there. Will Spradling leading the way. Remember Will Spradling? Yeah.
I do remember Will Spradling.
Oh,
very
boy.
Well.
Yeah. 17 points. He was the highest K-State score in the game. Rodney Magruder had 13 points here. That's when Shane Southwell was still a player. Big news on him. He is going to be coaching elsewhere. I think it was Northern Illinois. I can't remember.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Northern Illinois. Congratulations, Shane Southwell, for landing on your feet there. Yeah, he's going to be good over there. It's a big loss for K-State, but K-State's got a whole new staff here, obviously, with Jerome Tang and company now, and Shane now landing on his feet in Northern Illinois. He's going to be a good asset for those boys over there. Thomas Gibson, good old Thomas Gibson, 7 points, 5 for Shane. Angel Enriquez, Angel started the game. He only had 4 points in this game. Jordan Rodriguez, J.O., 9 points off the bench. Martavius Irving, 8 points. And forgotten Nino Williams, four points. When I look at this roster, there's some names on here that I can't remember that kind of just threw a light bulb, like a Maury Lawrence. You only play at garbage time. DJ Johnson. DJ Johnson was a monster. He played in garbage time as well. But yeah, Will Spradling leading the way there. Magruder, 17 and 13 respectively there. And K-State jumped. I remember this game because, I was in the booth for this one. Jumped on Florida, 33-23. And then Florida made a run in the second half of this ball game. But defense prevailed for K-State. In this basketball game here, this was back in 2012, December of 2012. Their attendance was pretty good, over 16,000 there, as well.
Place is packed.
It was packed. It was packed. It was loud. It was loud, man. It was the third annual Hy-Vee Wildcat Classic presented by Riley House and Subway. There as well for Florida, the highest scoring was Patrick Young with 19 points and Scotty Wilbekin with 11. I think that team might have made the tournament. Was the last team
to make the tournament? Yeah, Florida team was ranked. That Florida team was ranked in the top 10.
Yeah, because that's the
They were. In fact, Eddie, they might have even been like fifth. They were. They might have even been the highest spot. They were ranked. They were a single digits. They were in the single digits in the rankings. And K-State, if you recall, Eddie, K-State had high expectations for that was Bruce Over's first year, right? So there were that team was supposed to be really good.
Yes,
but they started really slow, and they were winning games, but they were not pretty games. They were ugly games, and Florida was just blitzing everybody. And I remember going into that game, K-State had dropped in the standings. I think they got knocked all the way out to unranked, even though they were winning the majority of their games. They were just so ugly. And Florida was one of the best teams in the country. They were just blitzing everybody. And we were going into the game, and I remember everybody just thinking, oh, my gosh, K-State's going to get blown out of the water. Like, the place was packed, right, because it was a huge game, because K-State still had a really good record, and there were still a lot of expectations.
Jump in here. Florida was 8-2, and K-State, according to, I had to do a double check on this to make sure that was right. K-State was 8-2 as well coming in.
They were.
Actually, 8-1 was Florida, and 8-2 was K-State. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They were still winning games. They just were really ugly. Really ugly wins. And so I remember the people were like, oh my gosh, K-State's like, they're screwed. Like, they're going to get killed. Like, this is going to be a bloodbath out here in the Sprint Center. And K-State won. And K-State controlled that game. And that flipped the switch for the season, Eddie. That flipped the switch for them. And K-State got going. And then they went 14-4 in Big 12 play. And we know that they ended up sharing part of the Big 12 title that year. So that, in my opinion, that Florida game was the game that flipped the switch on that season. That's fully what I believe.
Yep, and I like how we just threw it back a little bit to that game a little bit there. I like that.
Hey, man, that was a good memory. I was in the fifth row of the student section. I was 9 days out of a back surgery. I don't know if you remember me having sciatica my sophomore year, Eddie. I had sciatica. I had a back surgery. I remember this very well. So I had a back surgery, like, right after finals. And I've been recovering for like 2 weeks, and that was like the first thing that I did. I was like, I gotta go to the K-State game. I got tickets like the fifth row. Like, I've gotta go. So you remember Connor Cooper? So Coop was in town. Coop and I went. I think I even dragged my dad along with me too. And my dad went, and I ended up on ESPN. So you know that was all great. And I did. And we got a win, man. It was a great night. And it flipped the season for K-State, man. It flipped the season.
Yeah, definitely.
That was a good blast. I love it when we go down memory lane, Eddie.
Yes,
we bring back memories from like 10 years ago that we forgot about.
Yep, just like Oklahoma, K-State, Oklahoma. We talked about Colin Klein. Yep. There's going to be, stay tuned. There's going to be maybe an episode of one of those games. So back to memory lane. I've been planning on doing that.
I love memory lane, Eddie. It's one of my favorite places to go.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite places to visit.
So I believe I was doing color for this game with Dan Page. K-State, they set the tone for this game, and Florida made a run in the second half of the game, but K-State there held up, made some plays down the stretch, and I think somebody, I can't remember which player, I think hit a big shot or slammed it, or was a slam dunk or something like that. Maybe it was Texas A&M, maybe it's maybe the game I'm thinking about. When we were there the second year with Bruce Whipper was the third. But anyways, Florida coming here this time around, different scene. Florida's going to come out here, come up all the way to Manhattan, Kansas to play K-State. And looking at the SEC Big 12 Challenge slate now, Alabama, who last year knocked off Baylor last year at home, they got to travel to Oklahoma. Arkansas now goes to Baylor this year. Auburn will face off against West Virginia. Iowa State, it's Missouri. KU at Kentucky. So this is a rematch of last year.
But this time, every year it's KU, Kentucky. Every single year.
For whatever reason. Why don't you just change that up?
Seriously, I'm sick of seeing them. I get it. They're two blue bloods, but I'm sick of seeing them every year.
Yeah.
Come on, mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, mix it up with those two. Have Kentucky play West Virginia or something like that.
Have Kentucky play Baylor. I'd love to see Kentucky Baylor.
Ooh, that would be a good one.
Seriously, like, why not?
Yeah, they have to mix that up. Get rid of that matchup. I understand it's blue bloods of college basketball, but yeah, it's going to be an ESPN game, blah, blah, blah. Same old year.
I would much rather turn on Baylor and West Virginia. Not Baylor and West Virginia. Sorry, I'd much rather turn on Baylor and Kentucky than KU Kentucky. I'm sick of KU Kentucky. I see it every year. I want to see something different. Yeah. I would rather see Texas Tech. Oh, no, we did see Texas Tech Kentucky last year. No, we didn't see. No,
no
we did
no,
not.
No,
we saw Texas Tech Kentucky 2 years ago, and it was a great game. I would love to see that game again too. That was another one I would welcome.
Yeah.
And also, Eddie, we're seeing Texas and Tennessee. We see Texas and Tennessee every year.
There you go.
Can we see Tennessee against hell? Eddie, put Tennessee against Texas Tech.
Yeah.
Mix it up. Give them another Texas score.
Yeah, we saw that matchup last year.
I'd rather see that.
Yeah.
Won't die this hill.
TCU.
At least we're not playing Texas A&M.
Oh, no.
I'm not going to complain because we've got a new team.
Yeah, we got a new team. Well, kind of a familiar foe, but a team that we haven't played.
We've got a new team in this challenge.
Yeah, new team and a chance to really kind of make a big scene out of it, too. So, TCU, Mississippi State, Alex already talked about Texas and Tennessee. And Texas Tech, speaking of Texas Tech, they travel to LSU. They take on the Tigers as well. Obviously, these games are not set. Well, for the exception of, all we know is our game is set. We don't know about, I presume, actually, all these games will be on the same day or on the same week or something like that. So
yeah, I think they are all on Saturday.
Mashed in a blender, but yeah, SEC Big 12 Challenge on January 28th. So, K-State will welcome Florida to the Octagon of Doom, and yeah, Jerome Tang, that's his next challenge. Obviously, we talked about that well at length on this podcast. Gotta get it back, and especially like teams like a KU, well, obviously, fans here show up for KU game, we know that for a fact. They're gonna have to show up for like a Baylor, Florida team. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, man, to see if that's his next project, obviously, is to get the student's going to be there, regardless. It's everyone else. Get everyone else back on the train, and let's get this party started.
You're right, man. That's what it is about. And in regards to Florida coming in, I think it's a great opponent. I think it's a great opponent for K-State. It's an opponent that's got some name recognition. They've had a lot of really good teams in the past. A lot of good players have gone through Florida. And at the same time, Eddie, it's a program that I don't think you're pulling in just a loss, right? It's not like putting Kentucky on the schedule and being like, well, okay, like that's probably going to be a loss. Mark and L. No, I mean, I think K-State absolutely could compete with Florida and could beat them in Bramlage. So I think I look at it and think that's a team that's got a lot of name, a lot of namesake, a lot of fanfare around them. People know who they are. They're probably going to look good in a resume if you can beat them, and you're going to get them at home in Bramlage. And we know how difficult it has been to get good non-con schools or good non-con games, I should say, in Bramlage. That's really been one of the more difficult things for K-State to do. They've really had to either play those teams in tournaments or on neutral floors or on the road. They've not been able to attract them to Manhattan. And we saw what happened when they did get the game last year against Marquette. One of the best crowds of the year that they had. And look, no offense to Marquette, but Florida's a different beast. I mean, they just are. You know, Marquette is a good program. Shaka Smart's done a nice job with them. They've had a lot of success, but I think the Florida name carries a little more weight. And the conference they play carries a little more weight. And the fact it's going to be on a Saturday instead of a weeknight, I think, probably carries more weight. So I think that if K-State's, if K-State can drum up some excitement, if they're playing some decent basketball, I think you're going to have a really, really good atmosphere.
That's what I'm thinking.
For that game against Florida. And so, like I said, I'm really excited. I think you're going to get a lot better turnout than you would if it would have been Ole Miss again, or if it would have been Mississippi State again, or Texas A&M, or just one of these teams we see, like, every single year. And it's like, oh, my gosh, like, I'm so sick of playing them. So I'm eager for that. And you mentioned just the non-con schedule in general. Eddie, we only know four games, but you mentioned we know they go to Butler. We know they play Wichita State in Bramlage. We know they play Nebraska in Kansas City. And we know they play Florida in Bramlage. And we know that they're playing in the Cayman Islands Classic. So, look, we don't know. There's some games we don't know, obviously. I say some, I mean a lot. But there's some fun matchups on here. The Cayman Islands Classic, it's going to be a fun tournament there the week of Thanksgiving. And then going, obviously, to Indy and going to Hinkle Fieldhouse and playing Butler, that's going to be a lot of fun. Wichita State coming to Bramlage, are you kidding me, man? Like, are you kidding me? And it is on a Saturday. It's not on a Sunday this year. I won't have to split the screen between K-State and the Chiefs, thank goodness. So they got it right. So they'll have Wichita State there. You're going to be playing Nebraska, your old Big 12 rival, in the Sprint Center. And then you're going to have Florida coming in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. I mean, there are some really exciting games on that schedule. They just give me juice, man. They give me juice. I'm ready for basketball, man. That's what we want, you know. And we'll see how the rest of this schedule kind of fills out for K-State. But I think that there's some excitement here. And you're going to get some games in Bramlage. Wichita State and Florida, man, are you kidding? When's the last time K-State had two non-con games like that in Bramlage? I can't remember that. Like, let me know when, but I can't remember two games that could be as anticipated as those two. And yes, Wichita State is probably carries majority of that anticipation. The place will be freaking packed for Wichita State. You better believe it. But, I think it's shaping up to be a good non-con schedule. And in the Cayman Islands Classic, too, Eddie, to veer off of that, I think that that is a tournament where they I have it right here. It's a tournament where it's a winnable tournament, right? But it's also a tournament that I think can push them a little bit and give K-State a run for their money. Exactly, yeah. They got in it, you've got LSU, you've got Nevada, and we know Nevada's had some of the basketball teams here. I can speak for that, seeing them playing up against San Diego State. We've seen Western Kentucky's in it, and we've seen Western Kentucky make some tournament runs. You got Rhode Island in it, who's had a couple good seasons, too. So there are some teams in that tournament that really would be fun teams to watch too, but at the same time, it's also a field where I think K-State can have some success. So I'm really eager to see kind of the way that when those matchups come out for the Cayman Islands Classic, kind of the way that looks too. But I really like, just long story short, Eddie, I really like the way that the non-con schedule's breaking for them. Really excited that they're playing Florida, that they're getting a different team there in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. I think that it's going to be a good opportunity. Good opportunity for them. Good opportunity for the fans. And I have a feeling, Eddie, just have a feeling. Could be wrong, but I have a feeling that's going to be a big game. That game against Florida, because I bet you, I feel like K-State is going to be decent. So if I think that they'll be decent but not great in basketball, my guess is they'll probably be wanting to have a win against a non-con team in late January to bolster their resume. I'm just going to go on a limb and assume that that's probably something that they're going to be looking for at that time. And that'll probably be their last opportunity to get it. So that will probably be a big game against Florida to try to bolster that schedule, because I feel like they probably will be a bubble-ish team. That's kind of the feel that I have for them. And if they are, they'll need that game. They'll need that game, because that'll be their last opportunity against a non-con team for that schedule. And I don't know how good Florida will be. You know, we'll see. But if Florida's not great, then they're really going to need to win it, because it could kill their RPI if they if they lose that game. So either way, I think it'll be a big game for them.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
And to kind of just to put a bow on this for now, obviously we'll have plenty of time once we enter basketball season to talk about this game, but kind of put a bow on this for now as we wind down this episode of the podcast, episode 104 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly, Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas, Alex Aiden out there in San Diego, California, two K-State alums talking all K-State sports, Todd Golden and Jerome Tang, both first-year head coaches. Todd Golden recently was a coach at San Francisco. This is going to be his first year, at Florida. Tang is his first year as a head coach at any institution. So I'm going to get that corrected. But yeah, this is their first year, though. They have something in common, though. This is their first year at their respective schools. So that, keep an eye on that, and we'll especially keep an eye on Jerome Tang, obviously, as he continues to prepare for his first full year here in Manhattan, Kansas. We have entered the red zone on this edition of the podcast, folks. And I want to touch base on two things quickly before we close this thing out. First thing first, the NBA Finals wrapped up last night. Alex, you're wrong in your prediction.
I know.
I've been waiting to say that.
Very wrong.
I've been waiting to say that all day. Golden State, the dynasty lives on, knocking on Boston last night. At home. I thought when Boston went off that fast run, I'm like, here we go. They're going to blow Golden State right out of the water. But we should know better by now. Golden State, the championship pedigree, Steph Curry's talked about all postseason long. It came fruition, man. It came fruition. And Steph Curry with a knockout punch with a three late in this ball game there, holding off furious runs from Boston, Al Horford. I can't remember how many points he had, but he was lighting them up from three yet again. But it was not enough. Too many turnovers for Boston in this one.
Oh, yeah.
Let it get away. They let this one slip away. And Mark Jackson said it best when it comes to getting to this point. You want to capitalize. When you get to the finals or the World Series or the Super Bowl, you hear this saying all the time, right? You want to capitalize, right? Because you never know when you're going to get back there. I mean, there's only so many few teams that got back there, got lucky. I shouldn't say lucky. That's not a good word. Or been fortunate to get back there multiple times.
You need a little luck. You need a little luck to get
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
I think it requires a little luck for anyone to get to a championship.
Yeah. Golden State's been there many times.
Yep.
San Antonio. I can go on and on from there. But, yeah, you get to see what I'm saying there. Boston let it slip away last night at home. You lose on your home floor. Let Golden State celebrate on your home floor. And Golden State now has won this thing four times. Steve Kerr now is going to have nine rings.
Nine
total.
Rings.
Total, man. He just he loves being around winners, man. What can you say? This was actually... They weren't even supposed to get to this point. Phoenix was the number one seed in the West.
Yeah.
Most improbable, I think Steve said this somewhere in one of his press conferences, this is one of his more probable teams, something in the lines of that, because this team was not supposed to get here at all.
Yep.
This team was hit with injuries for the last couple of seasons, obviously. Klay Thompson has missed 2 years in a row with serious knee issues. Steph Curry been injured, Draymond, and those guys. But somehow, here we are with the veteran leadership, the championship DNA that this team has. You still have those three guys, which now they have Draymond, Klay, and Steph. They have the most playoff wins out of any trio. Now they passed, recently passed, San Antonio's trio, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and... Tony Parker recently in the series for the most wins. So, yeah, man, they Golden State Texas in six. And got to wonder, what if you were Boston there? You rode a hot wave there all postseason long there, and it all came to a halt last night.
It did. And I think it's going to be more difficult for – I think it's going to be difficult for Boston, Eddie, to get back to – to that point, which is tough, tough for them to swallow. You're thinking about the East. And man, I mean, you beat the Bucks, but they didn't have Chris Middleton. Are you going to get them shorthanded again and be able to fend them off again with Giannis? When Philly can gel with James Harden, even though I'm not bought in on that Philly team, mainly because I'm not bought in on James Harden.
Something will happen with James Harden next year where he wants out.
I'm sorry. I'm not in on James Harden. But with all that said, despite me not being in on James Harden and not being hot on Philly, you can't deny the fact that you've got Joel Embiid and James Harden on the same team. So that's still going to be tough to overcome. And then the Miami Heat. You know, the Miami Heat obviously are not going anywhere. They've got a good team down there in South Beach. And also the Nets, man. The Nets are going to, I would assume, bounce back and have a better year next year, too. So I just don't think it's going to, moral of the story, it's just going to be difficult, in my opinion, Eddie, for Boston to be able to get back there. I really do. I think it'll be easier for Golden State because I look at the West and I see the West a little more wide open than the East. I think there's questions in Phoenix. Does DeAndre Ayton stay? Is he traded?
There's been a lot going on with that.
Is he going to be traded or not? Hey, you're John Collins. I've heard him linked in rumors to my Blazers. So let me know if that's something I should get on board with.
I'll let you know. I'll give you a heads up on that.
I'll pick your brain if that trade ends up happening.
I'll let you know
about that. On what I can expect from John Collins. but DeAndre Ayton, I mean, is he going to be there in Phoenix?
And speaking of, I'll jump in here real fast. I'll let you finish. DeAndre Ayton apparently has been linked. Well, there's been talks around here in Atlanta that DeAndre Ayton could possibly be laying here. I don't know.
I've heard him linked. I've heard him linked to Atlanta. I've heard him linked to Detroit. I've heard him linked to Toronto. I've heard him linked to Portland. I've heard him linked to Oklahoma City. I've heard him linked to a lot of different teams. And I don't think he'll end up in Portland because I think Portland's going after OG Anunoby in Toronto. I think that's who they're trying to land in a trade. And then if they don't get him, I think John Collins is their number two. I think that's who their target would be, their second target, based on what I'm hearing in the Portland /NBA world. But either way, point being, questions around the Suns because we don't know what their team will look like. There's still questions in Dallas because we don't know who's the number two next to Luka Doncic there. Yes, they did beat the Suns in seven, but it felt very, I'm not going to say lucky, but it felt, I don't know if they could do that again. I'll put it that way. I don't know if they could do that again.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't see them doing that again.
I don't know. And then the Grizzlies, they had a great year. They were a two seed. Can they continue that? Can they replicate that season or not? I think that they're a really good team, but they were new to the show last year, right? And so can they replicate it? And then the Lakers, man, don't get me started. Let's not go there.
Nope.
They're not a contender. So my point is, the West is pretty open, in my opinion. The Nuggets are going to be really good, I think, once they get healthy again. Phoenix is still going to be good. But Golden State's going to be in there, man. They're going to be right in the mix. And so, very long way of saying, this really hurts for Boston because I think that there was a better path next year and the year after, potentially, to the championship for Golden State than there was for Boston. Because I just think the West is more wide open. And so for Boston to have that opportunity and to just kind of let it slip through their fingertips, I shouldn't say slip through their fingertips because Steph Curry had a hell of a series, man. I mean, Steph Curry did Steph Curry things. He did Steph Curry things. So I'm not gonna throw that on Boston. But you mentioned it, way too many turnovers, way too many mistakes down the stretch. Things we didn't see Boston doing early in the series and in past series. And all of a sudden, it kind of revved its head. And you know what? I think that is, Eddie. I think it's a little bit of that championship, a little bit of that championship DNA coming out of out of Golden State, right?
Yeah.
You know, they know when to turn that thing up a notch, and they did. They turned it up. Steph's got that. He's got that, you know, that NBA Finals gear that he can go to and hit, and he did, and that's what makes Golden State so good and so special and so dangerous. And I agree 100% with Steve Kerr in regards to the fact that this would be the sweetest for me too, Eddie, because this is not the most talented Golden State team. In fact, this is not one of the most talented NBA championship teams. I mean, this is not the Golden State team of old. This team is not as good as those old Golden State teams. Like those vintage teams that we saw win the first three. This is not the same team. This team is not as good. They got good players. Andrew Wiggins had a great year. We talked about Poole and the year that he had. We talked about some of the role players and what they did. And Klay Thompson coming back was a good story and all. But this team is not as good as those other three teams. And for them to find a way to win that series, in a series where, honestly, I kind of felt like Boston did have a little more talent. I think it speaks to that team, the championship DNA that you kept talking about in the series, Eddie. And I think it just eventually kind of revved its head, right? I think experience ended up kind of showing at the end of that series. I think that was really the turning that was the key factor in it. And so I think you were right there. And, you know, kudos to Golden State, which is ironic because when Golden State won their three, I was like, oh, I hate this. Like, gosh, I'm so sick of seeing Golden State continue to win. Like, oh my gosh, it's just so annoying. Hey, Golden State, this sucks. Like, they're ruining the NBA. Like, oh, like I hated it. But it didn't bug me this year. It didn't bug me this year when they won it, Eddie, because it didn't feel like the same Golden State team to me. It really didn't. Felt like a different team. It felt like a kind of a redemption story. You know, they really took their lumps the last couple years and kind of came back from it. And then to do that, which is really impressive. You gotta acknowledge it. You know, good for them. I hope they don't win it next year. we don't need to see if we're getting ring number 10. But, you know, hey, you know, it was good for them this year. We'll see what happens next year. But good stuff, man. It was good stuff. And it was it was not my favorite NBA Finals series. I really enjoyed the Suns Bucks series more last year. I really did. Now that I was about to say it was a really good series. I mean, it was a fine series, but I enjoyed last year's series more. I did. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the fact that the Suns got up 2-0 and then the Bucks just blitzed them. I don't know if it was the fact that. I don't know what it was, Eddie. Maybe it was all the blowouts that we saw prior to the series, because we just saw so many blowouts in the playoffs.
There's a lot of blowouts.
Maybe that's what it was. I'm not sure what it was. I seemed to be a little more into the one last year. But either way, it was still a good series. It was a good series. We had good close games. It went 6. So, you really can't ask for much more in the NBA Finals.
Yep, Golden State, the NBA champions there, fourth title there, and last but not least, cannot go off the, well, first, I'm going to show listening there before I say that, of course, the Pearl Project Podcast, weekly edition, partnered by the Rally in the Valley, month and a half away here in Manhattan, Kansas, August 6th, behind the parking lot of the Midwest Car Collection Center here in Manhattan, Kansas, though. So, and for those of you very interested in this event, taking your classic car out there, it's going to be $10 registration, and spectators are free with a couple of other events going on in between as well. So, definitely, there is a separate episode on that. Check out the old archives. It's in the feed, the Pearl Project Podcast feed, and coming up, I will be sitting down with the folks in charge to talk more about the inaugural car show here in Manhattan, Kansas. Cannot wait to do that next Friday with them. And now be in podcast form as well. So I'll give you more details on next week's edition of the podcast for more on that. But we just want to get that in there real quick. And last but not least, Kansas City, 2 hours away from here, obviously. Well, less than that. Shy, anyways. But Kansas City wins, and it will host the World Cup in 2026. Big. And this has been really been talked about for a while. I know a couple other cities were in this discussion as well, but KC has it. The World Cup coming here. Obviously, for those who don't know, who are listening to this podcast, KC has a soccer team that is obviously Sporting KC. And now we're going to have, KC's going to have the World Cup, and I think next year they're supposed to have the NFL Draft. I'm not mistaken as well.
You are correct, yes. The NFL Draft, going to places. Because, Eddie, I have a theory. I think quickly in the NFL Draft, but I don't want to deviate. The Chiefs need a defensive end. They need a defensive end. That's absolutely who they're taking in the first draft. Who's one of the top five defensive ends in the draft next year, likely?
Felix.
And Yannick Uzama. That is correct. Where is he from? He's from Kansas City. Where do you go to school? Kansas State. Who needs a defensive end? Kansas City. Where's the draft? Kansas City. Who should the Chiefs draft defensive end in the first draft? Come on, guys. This is so easy. It's like a movie. Proceed. I just wanted to point that out.
So, yeah.
Continue. That was a side tangent. I've been thinking about that a lot lately.
Well, and you got it out there. Nice little theory there.
Now it's out there. Now I thought it's now officially out for a while.
Yeah, so NFL draft, and now you add, obviously, the World Cup to Kansas City. Not only that, you have one of the more talented soccer teams already out there in Sporting KC. You have the Kansas City Chiefs doing what they're doing with Patrick Mahomes. So that's it. All I want to say is congratulations to Kansas City on getting another big-time sporting event to the Midwest. That's big. That's big right there. So that's in another 4 years or 3 years, something like that. So, wow. Yep. Something else.
And Eddie, I think just the big thing, and too, is I put this out on social media yesterday. There were so many people just so much time, effort, and energy into that bid. You mentioned it. Multiple years process for them to really get to this point, and it was just so, like I said, from the Hunt family, who were the owners of the Chiefs, to the mayor of Kansas City, to Sporting Kansas City and their role in it, to all the other community partners, just so many people banding together to really make the strongest bid possible to FIFA to be a host city for the World Cup, and for Kansas City to get it, especially when you look at other cities that have the second, Kansas City was the smallest host city of all the host cities. I think that the second smallest was like the 11th largest city in the country, and Kansas City's like 33rd or something. Like it was a big gap, and so I think it speaks to the city and how strong their bid was, and really how strong the soccer growth is really becoming a really avid, as we were talking about earlier in the podcast, it's become an avid soccer city, and a lot of that is because Sporting Kansas City, and now you've got Kansas City Current, the women's soccer team, as well, in Kansas City, and the soccer scene is just becoming really, really big there, and similar to the Kansas City. Growing up in Kansas City, I can tell you what, that is a fan base that's a city that loves its sports, and they show out to everything. So there's no doubt that Arrowhead will be packed for those World Cup games. People will travel to Kansas City. Kansas Cityans will go to those games. And I just think it also speaks credit to the city for the fact that they've landed the NFL Draft in 2023. The new Atlanta's host city in the World Cup in 2026. I just think it speaks on the city and really the strength of the city, and really, Eddie, the city being open to really making changes in part to be able to attract more events like this, more things like this. Because, look, filling the NFL draft, they built a new airport. Now, it's not the reason they built a new airport, but it was one of the promises that they have a new airport for it. For the FIFA World Cup, they're making over $50 million in renovations to Arrowhead Stadium as part of the requirements they promised FIFA. for that bid. I mean, they are willing to do these things to really upgrade their facilities to really provide the best fan experience. And so that, I think, again, I guess speaks a lot to the city. And if you look, this isn't where they stopped. I know Kansas City pushed really hard trying to get an NBA team as well. They're pushing for other stuff too. And as they should, I mean, they got a lot of momentum right now in the city, and they should continue to kind of ride that momentum. But amazing day for my hometown. I had a couple people hating on me saying, hey, you know, you don't live there anymore. What are you talking about? Hey, I get half a vote, okay? I get half of a say. Hey, I mean, this is still my hometown. I cannot live there anymore, but it's my hometown. I want to see it succeed. So, it was, it's my heart that I'm literally wearing a shirt right now that says KC with a heart on it. So, clearly, that's where my heart's at. super, super happy for my hometown to be able to see them land that. Oh, my gosh. Eddie, people are on cloud nine in Kansas City today about that. Just cloud nine. Yeah. My feeds were just full of people just thrilled. And seeing the celebration at P&L last night, it's cool stuff, man. Cool stuff. It's cool to see it happen in Kansas City.
And with that, that's how we're going to wrap up episode 104 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly this week. Folks, Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, San Diego, California. I'm here in Manhattan, Kansas. Appreciate y'all for subscribing, downloading this podcast. If you're new to the podcast and you're not subscribed, go ahead and hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, and you should be getting an alert every time we post new content, folks. We are in the calm section, if you will, of in between seasons, if you will, of the athletic season. We just wrapped up 2021, 2022 with track and field, and now we're preparing in recruiting, as Alex mentioned earlier tonight on his podcast, and getting ourselves ready to go for 2022-2023 athletic season. Alex, go ahead and close us out this week.
Could we, Eddie, next week be talking about Avery Johnson being a K-State Wildcat? I don't know. Look, the Elite 11 camp is happening June 28th. I believe you want to make a decision before then. So, will we know? I don't know. He visited K-State this last weekend with Jonathan Manning, whose brother Todd Manning, by the way, four-star wide receiver recruit out of Kansas City. They both seem to have a really good time there. So, football recruiting news is coming up. Dylan Edwards, by the way, is in Manhattan this weekend as well. So,
yeah, yep, yep.
Again, we'll see with this 2023 class. Could be pretty special if things fall right, but that is what's coming up. I hope everybody has a great rest of the night. Go Cats, and we will talk to y'all.
On another episode of the Purple Project Podcast.
Make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll catch y'all on the next episode. Thank you for listening. Go Cats!